Welcome to Season 2 of Resting Glitch Face, a Shadowrun actual play.
This is Shannon. I'm playing Eris.
Hi, this is Sid, and I'm playing Jet.
This is Dot. I'm playing Binary.
This is Maddie. I'm playing Collateral.
And my name is Eric, the Game Master. Be warned, some of the following content is not suitable for all audiences. Upstairs on the first floor, you hear boom!
I'm gonna run upstairs.
Motherfucker, what's he doing? Yeah, upstairs.
Okay, you run upstairs, and the living room is like the couch had been completely moved out of the way. You see dog leashes now on the ground, and Cascade Greenleaf has him in an arm bar with his knee on his neck. And he's like, just tap out, man. Just tap out.
I draw my knife. I say, what the fuck?
What are you doing in my house?
And then you dial, and you're in the middle of dialing your dad's number, and your dad says, Goody, are you okay?
Yeah, you're awake. You're okay?
Yeah, he says, we were coming in and we were attacked.
You're in here? To Joe's house?
Then you see a wheelchair being pushed up to your door.
Run upstairs.
And Dogleash is like, he's almost unconscious, and he's still naked.
Dogleash, come put some clothes on for fuck's sake. Please.
Cascade, it's okay. It's fine. He's not a threat.
So this 50-year-old man is like kneeling on Dogleash's neck and he looks up at you and he says, oh, he's a friend of yours? I thought he was like some sort of creep that broke into your house.
Jet absolutely dies.
This isn't my...
All right, he stands up and he goes, oh, I'm really sorry. And he kind of dusts Dogleash off. He's like...
She's going to go up and kind of pat him on the cheek.
And he goes, what the fuck just happened?
You okay? You okay, babe?
All right, he's like, just tell me I didn't look ridiculous.
Oh, you looked fine.
Okay.
Dad's going to take him, huck him over his shoulder and run upstairs.
Okay.
My dad's coming through the door?
Yeah, your mom is pushing him in a wheelchair.
I run to my dad.
Okay, he's like, he's in the wheelchair and he's hugging you and he's like, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay.
Are you, you're completely?
Well, I'm still pretty weak. And you see him, and he's got a little bit of a sag to one side of his face. Mm-hmm. And he's mostly motioning and like, when he hugs you, you feel like you can tell that his right side's a little bit weaker than his left, but not too bad.
Yeah.
You know, and after you hug him and, you know, and he kind of looks you in the face and he says, I should be okay. I should be all right. And your mom's just standing there and she says, we came as soon as you called.
I just called right now.
All right, she, like, kind of looks around.
I called as you were walking in.
She says, let's get inside.
Yeah, and I gesture them in, and I close the door. Did you talk to me? And I air quotes the me.
All right, she says, yes. You don't remember?
I look at Joe. I didn't talk to you.
Mary says, I'm sorry.
There it is. I was waiting for it. My sweet girl. I love her.
Oh, Mary.
I knew you'd be worried, and I want, and you, they needed to come to the safe house, right? They needed to be safe.
I fucking love her. Oh, my goodness.
Mary, I appreciate the effort, but this house is not as safe as one would think.
This is a not safe house.
But I thank you. Your heart was in the right place. And I kind of, like...
Muss her hair up.
Muss her hair.
All right, so when you say that, you like, ruffle her hair a little bit, and she looks at you, and she says, I'm sorry. I just, you know, if I had a dad, and I would want him to be okay.
Eris just looks at her, and she's like, I know, Mary. You don't have to apologize.
All right, your mom is, like, standing there, and she looks at you, and she says, she sounded just like you.
She's very talented.
That's the technomancy, probably.
All right. Your mom takes it like a step back.
Bitch.
Joe puts a hand on Mary's back.
Jet walks back downstairs.
And Cascade, like I say, he's a very clean-cut, middle-aged elf. Clearly, he still works out and all this other stuff. But he's not like, you know, ripped. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, like a lean muscle. And as you come walking down, he goes, I did not mean to hurt your friend.
Totally fine. I can see how the mistake was made. He can look alarming.
Well, especially naked.
He was naked, yeah.
I thought he was just like a creep. So.
Yeah.
Why did he come downstairs naked? I have so many more questions.
Hey, let's all table that, because this seems a lot more urgent right now. I'll ask him later.
All right, yeah. Okay, so you didn't go back to our house, did you?
Dad's like, no, and he kind of looks over, and Greenleaf says, no, we've just kind of been on the move.
Right, yeah.
Until Lucas woke up, we weren't quite sure what to do, and when you, and he does air quotes, called, said that you had a medical professional here.
Oh.
Okay.
Is your friend still here?
She's at work right now. I mean, I'm sure I can call her and see.
And he says, I'm okay. I said I'm okay, and I'm okay.
Yeah, but, okay, yeah.
I'll make the medical decisions. How about that? How about we leave the tactical shadow runny decisions to you all? How about that?
Why? Anyway, she's going to turn to Cascade and just say, hi, that was very impressive. Hold there. My name is Jet. It's good to meet you.
Don't flirt with Cascade.
I'm not fucking flirting. Jesus Christ.
All right. He
Walk
says.
Off my crotch, dude.
He all right. So, yeah, you have this back and forth about don't flirt with him. All right. He's like.
Aeris was giving Jet a shit eating grin immediately.
He says, you can call me Cascade, although. And then he kind of has this kind of like. Moment where he's like super proud of himself, so you see his head kind of bob side to side, and he goes, but you know, my runner name was Frey back in the day.
Because you're cool. In the Frey.
Yeah, for sure. That's really.
No, it's not because I was in the Frey, but although I was pretty proficient at that. No, it was, you know, the Norse god Frey, you know, he was an elf, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I mean, it was lost on a lot of people, you know. People always thought, oh yeah, you're a fighter, you know, it was that, and I'm like, not that Frey.
I get it.
She's pointing at Aeris, and she says, yeah.
Aeris is just nodding at him, and she's just like, mood.
The gods references are a little tough.
Hit or miss.
Yeah.
People just don't appreciate mythology anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's how my wife and I met, actually, because her street name was Freya.
Frey and Freya. Good night.
Did you know?
And you picked that. You no, picked I those did. Different.
Yeah, it was completely serendipitous.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of cute. Aww. That's very sweet.
And so I was, you know, I was smitten the first time I ever saw her, and she said her name was Freya, and I was like, aw.
Wait, who the frag are these people?
Val, meet my parents. Sophia and Lucas LeClean.
Lucas is sitting in a wheelchair. He nods. Hello.
And a close family friend, Cascade Greenleaf.
Greenleaf?
Yeah, remember I recognized her when we saw her.
You mean the bitch that wanted to cast spells on us?
Yes.
She gave me some so lovely wrist wraps. I love them so much. Your wife does fabulous work.
He smiles.
Did? I mean, is she?
Cascade just kind of like side-eyes you for a moment, and then he says, she's gone, yes.
Can I
And She was a bit much.
Is everyone forgetting the conversation that we had? She essentially threatened us. Are we fine with that now? Is that okay?
Yes, we're fine with it. Like, mages want to cast spells on any low-life Shadowrunners that they can pull it over on. That just... it's a fact of life.
Cascade sits down on the couch, and he's just kind of looking down, and he looks up, and he says, I'm really sorry that she threatened you.
I appreciate the apology. I'm sorry she's dead.
You didn't do it.
Also true.
Well, actually, maybe you and Dr. Laclede can help me with something. You might know more about my problem than I do.
These are my parents.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to be messed up in all of our biz. That's why I try to keep them separate.
Right. This is a conversation that's happening.
Yeah.
In front of your parents.
Yes.
And Lucas looks right at you, Bianca, and says, Goody, who are you protecting? Maybe it's time we put all the cards on the table.
I would love it if someone could show me their fucking cards, please.
Clearly, you girls, and I don't mean that as an insult, but you're all my daughter's age, so you're clearly have gone through a lot of stuff. I mean, and he looks over at Cascade, and then he looks over at your mom and is like, wouldn't be stuff we hadn't heard before.
I'm adopted.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh my God, Jet, we know. Kidnapped, then adopted. Boo fucking who? We're all orphans here.
Oh, Drek, there was one thing I forgot to say.
I called my mother to ask if I was adopted.
You talked to your mom?
Yeah, I did.
Congrats.
That's the second one, yeah. She kind of turns to Lucas. You remember how she is.
Oh, yes.
She's doing really good. She got some work done, which is sketchy because she was, when I last spoke to her, a bus driver married to a line cook.
Right, yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
So came into some money.
Yes, and I think she was lying about how.
Do you think it's possible that your recent benefactor may have also been pulling strings elsewhere?
No, I don't think that was it.
Okay.
Sophia says, you do know what the term cards on the table mean, right?
I was going to say, if we're going to be honest, then I feel like we should stop fucking around and be honest.
Fine. Okay. Sure.
I guess I'll tell the adults everything. God.
I was at William Falstaff's house.
Snake.
Possibly. I don't know. And then he told me that I'm adopted, and he told me just a whole mess of things.
Yeah, and your name is Jenna Mayfair. We know.
Cascade says, say that name one more time.
Jenna Mayfair. Ring any bells?
You see, he visibly goes white, and he says, Jenna Mayfair.
Yes.
He looks over at Sophia and he says, okay, cards on the table. Back in, he kind of, like he's searching his memory banks and he kind of goes, back in 52, 53,
mm-hmm.
My wife and I found you in a Seder Croup black site.
How did she look like this? And she's going to, does he have like, is it, do you have AR?
He's got contacts.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
She's going to swipe over the picture of Jenna Mayfair.
He nods.
Okay.
That's exactly.
That's me.
He's just staring at you.
Cool.
And then he looks over at the rest of you and he says, and you've been living here how long?
Here? Like 3 months, maybe?
And you've been associated with Bianca for how long?
Oh,
since
longer
we were
than
15?
That, yeah. No, I was 13, so. For a while. I've lived here in St. Louis for like 4 years.
You were in a stasis unit. That's the best way I could describe it. In a vault.
Tracks.
That we were sent by my mother-in-law. It was, Seder Croup had a project called Geschlossenheit. And you were there. You were in there. We brought you out.
Hmm.
Then you were transported to Mount Shasta, and that was the last I knew where you were. And then you turn up in St. Louis All right. He looks over at Lucas and he says, this can't be a coincidence.
She was one of Babushka's little projects. And if we are to believe her, she's had her fingers in everything, including the founding of St. Louis.
What's the first thing you remember as a child?
I don't know. Running through sprinklers on a hot summer's day.
Getting a boo-boo taken care of by your mom.
I was drawing in sidewalk chalk, and I got it on the house. And then mom yelled at me a bunch because I actually ended up staining a bunch of things. And that's about it. I mean, I was like two. But I did find, now hang on a second, I received a file from Juan Dr. Kobe, recovered a file with a full list of everything I've ever done up until I entered the dance school. So at the very least, he was keeping tabs on me. She brings up the file.
He looks at it for a second and he says, I think some of those might be fabricated because, and then you see him and he pulls out an ancient looking comm and he's like,
oh my God, he's touching it with his hands.
And then you see him kind of do
it. You just got your helmet back.
He hits the send button. Bloop, and you see in your AR, you see a grainy-ass video, like a CCTV of like a security cam of you as a child running through some sort of a complex and just waving your hand, opening doors, shooting shit. And he says, are you a technomancer?
No.
And he squints for a minute. Well, he freezes the freeze frame and he says, well, for a time you were.
I don't think it's possible to like be a technomancer and then not be a technomancer.
No,
right?
It's not.
Well, it could also not be you and you could be who you think you are.
That's true.
Well, but if I was, then why would my mother lie?
Why wouldn't she?
I mean, easy. Falstaff paid her. Falstaff is a lying liar. Liar McLiar face.
Well, if Falstaff was the one who gave her the information, her mom would have lied to corroborate the story.
Lucas says, why do you keep using that name?
Well, Mary remembered him calling himself Dorian Daly.
Yeah.
But
Lucas,
he introduced himself as William.
As soon as you say that, Lucas's eyes get really big.
Do you know who that is?
He says, yeah, he's a murderous lunatic.
Dope. Awesome.
Oh, cool. So
I did a paper on him when I was in medical school.
What? What?
What?
It was because of my recommendation that he was supposed to be committed for life.
Tight.
Wait, he originally hired me to keep Bianca safe. How does that make any sense?
Well, I'm looking at my dad.
Why would Daly want you safe?
Yeah.
He looks over at Cascade and Cascade says, well, I might be able to help with that, honestly. My wife had come here to investigate the Gateway incident. Mm-hmm. According to her, it was a major magical upheaval. And he kind of looks over at Joe like as if to like say, you know, do you agree? She said that it was something that it was happened on a like a macro scale, but it had happened before on a micro scale here. And she thought maybe there was something about it. But it, you know, it happened like 100 years ago. So she came here and she employed the help of Lucas and some of his contacts and through Lucas got in touch with Catherine DeMonil, who was then supposed to be like her eyes and ears, but then ended up betraying her.
Val does what? Say fuck under her breath.
What a shocker.
Catherine DeMonil was also involved with Falstaff.
He nods and he says, I think he got to her.
Huh. Got to Catherine or got to
Catherine.
Yeah.
Eris gives a very serious look over to Val and then to Joe, and she just kind of stays at Joe. She's like, do you think that's what happened to Cammy?
Catherine DeMille is evil, but she wouldn't kill her own daughter.
Lucas says, up until Callie came to town, Catherine DeMille was all about the social life.
Right.
After she arrived and something changed in her, all she was about was the Black Veil Prophet Society.
Mm. The what?
All right, and then he looks over at Bianca.
Did I not tell you about that?
Boggs is like, of course. Of course. Of course it has to do with them.
Boggs? What do you...
They're the... He kind of looks over at Lucas and says, pardon the phrase, but it's a bunch of old money dicks from St. Louis who run this fucking city.
Right, okay. So...
Like the parade that they do as a front, but then also more shady stuff.
All right, and he says, you know, like Cervantes and Shoto's. He looks right at Lucas and says, the Laclede's.
Not this generation.
Yeah. So there's this super secret society of rich fuckos that are ruining people's lives for the sake of it? Like, what is the motivation there?
An absolute shocker, I am.
Okay,
now.
In their minds, they aren't ruining lives. They're making the city better.
Okay, this is what I don't understand. The most recent time that I saw Catherine DeMille, she made a comment about not associating with so many elves. Is that a thing too?
Oh,
because if the Laclede's were part of that society, I don't see how that would make any sense. So there has to be another person at play here.
I mean,
or they're trying to get all the, you know, all the non-humans out.
Are there any other metahumans now that the Laclede's are out?
Lucas says no. That's why I wouldn't become involved.
Okay. So, wait. Is your grandmother still involved with them?
The Laclede's were involved with them.
Not, okay.
Not the Peabody's.
Right.
And that's when Sophia says, my mother is a completely different wrinkle to all of this.
By the way, Jet.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, so a little bit ago... I I noticed a spirit, you know, spying on B and I. It was really creepy. Peabody sent it. She wants to talk to you.
Oh, really? And you didn't think to tell me before?
Well, I mean, look.
Yeah, I know. We were doing.
I got it.
We were having a thing. I know.
Okay. Like, Drac.
I can't keep her waiting, can I?
So, I mean, you could. It'd be very funny.
Yeah, it'd be funny, but I'm also like, I'm going to be honest with you. I've been expecting her to call on me for the last, you know, month and a half. So I kind of want to get it out of the way. I mean, it's going to go fine. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I should probably go do that. I'm going to go get cute. Anyway.
So when Jet leaves, Bianca follows her.
Yeah. What? What's up, B?
I'm going to wait until we're, like, kind of away from everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, just be careful. And she's fragging up so much Drek right now. And she's so fragging dangerous. And don't let her get in your head. I know how you are with her. Just be careful.
And she pauses for a second, and then she's going to turn around and just hug you so tightly. Yes. And give you a little kiss on the head. And she says, B, I am a grown-ass woman now. I think I can handle it. I have had 4 years of dealing with your grandma. That's 4 years more than Joe. So I think that I know how to handle her at this point. And besides, I'm going to take Dog Leash with me. So,
right. I don't really like, you know, spending any time with her anymore either. But
yeah. I mean, she doesn't have anything I want anymore. She doesn't have anything to hold over me. So, you know, I guess I just want closure, you know?
Yeah. You got to do what you got to do.
Thanks.
And I squeeze you in the goodbye sort of way.
And I give you a little kiss on the forehead this time instead of the top of the head.
Aww.
And then Jet's going
to
dip.
All right. So you pull up to the Wildwood Estate.
Mm-hmm.
And the gate as you're pulling. Who's driving, by the way?
So given that I don't have a car, it's definitely got to be Dog Leash because I didn't want to take a go-go because that's embarrassing.
Okay.
But I am riding side saddle.
All right.
Because I'm wearing a skirt now. And Jet took some time to get cute.
Right. He's like, comes to pick you up and he's like, great, now I feel underdressed.
Dog Leash, I'm going to be honest with you. You're not going in at all.
Wait a minute. So I'm just driving you to this swank-ass place and then I got to sit outside?
Well, here's
it's raining.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that, but keep in mind that this bitch is richer than anybody in this world and probably the most powerful person that you, I, or anyone will ever speak to.
Why don't we just walk in and fucking, you know, gat her?
She hunts dragons, Dog Leash.
Yeah, sure.
No, like, she does. Mm-hmm. It's a whole damn
thing. Is it like
thing.
A safari thing where no. She, like, shoots from the car?
Nah. This bitch is the real fraggin' deal.
Okay. I mean, that sounds like a kind of person you want on your side, right?
Well, she did ruin my life.
Oh,
totally and completely. So, you know, I'm not
frag this
super
bitch.
Jazzed. Well, here's the thing, is that I feel like I might be able to get some stuff out of her.
Oh, okay. You know, oh, from like, you're going to steal some shit out of the house?
No, I'm going to pump her for information.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a little. I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go. Honestly, I'm just looking for catharsis.
Okay.
You know?
Well, I mean, I'm still going to bring my big dog then. And, you know, if you ever want me to bring it in and let her eat, then that's what we'll do.
Okay. I mean, where would I be? And she kind of punches him in the shoulder and says, where would I be without my emotional support hunk?
He's like, oh, okay. Do I have to wear like a weird like backpack or something?
For sure, no.
Oh. Just like a red backpack? So that way people can identify me? So I can get on planes and shit?
Are you normally not allowed on planes?
Not as an emotional support hunk. More like a lunk.
What, you want to sit in my lap the whole time?
Yes, please. No, I don't. I you know what? To be honest with you, and you're having this conversation as he's driving now. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, you're having it through comm, so it's, you know, it's not like you're yelling over his shoulder and shit. And he's driving and he's like, "So, no, I mean, to be completely honest with you, knowing what I know, I probably wouldn't be able to compose myself and would probably try and throw hands and get myself killed." So probably better off I don't go in.
That's why I'm not inviting you in.
Okay. Can I fuck up her gardener or something?
For sure, no.
Oh, damn.
No, her like, dude, her guy is dead. Like a resurrected dead. It's
like a zombie?
Yeah.
Ew. Does he stink?
I'm going to be honest. I don't remember. It's been a minute since I've seen him. So maybe he stinks now.
Ooh. Yeah, how long has it been? How long has this dude been rotten?
I mean, if it's the same Sergei that was there when I was a kid, then 8 years.
Oof.
At least.
I could probably beat an 8-year-old dead dude.
Yeah, well, I don't know. This guy's pretty big.
Oh, now you're just teasing me. You're tempting me with fate here.
I gotta get my legs in now.
I'm gonna throw down with some ancient-ass dead man. Okay, fine. I'll behave myself. Can I order some donuts or something?
I think after this talk, I'm going to need some donuts.
Sounds good. Well, I'll pre-order some. They'll make the special ones.
Fuck yes. And we'll just go pick them up.
Yeah. I'm feeling maple right now.
Ooh.
It's like eating a big waffle or something. You know?
Yeah. I like the waffle ones. Those are nice.
Yeah. Let's do that. Okay.
And
he's like,
get me a coffee
he's
too.
Calling up shit and he's like placing donut orders and shit. Okay. Oh, there's a really good donut house not too far from this place. Mm-hmm. This place is really nice.
It is.
All right. So you pull up and as you're driving up the, and it's not like, you know, like the gates right on the main road. It's like you have to drive along a wooded path just to get to the gate, to get into the grounds. And the gate like swings open as you're arriving and you pull up. He drives you like right up to, you know, the circle drive up to the front door. As he stops, the front doors swing open. They're like 12-foot tall double doors that look like they're like a foot thick. And they just kind of open up pretty smoothly and uniformly. And you see Sergei come walking out and he's carrying an umbrella. and, you know, comes down the stairs and holds the umbrella over you. So he's getting wet, but he's holding the umbrella over you, even though you're soaking because you were on the back of a motorcycle.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. And he just kind of stoically just stands there and waits for you to start walking. He doesn't even seem to notice Dog Leash at all.
The very last thing that she does is she takes off her helmet and then she says, "Don't move." And she looks straight at Dog Leash and uses the mirrored part of his visor to, like, fix her hair, make sure that she's looking good.
Says, "You look beautiful, babe."
"Thanks. That means a lot." She hands the helmet to Dog Leash and follows Sergei.
All right. And you hear Dog Leash in your comm. He's like, "I could take that old fuck."
She doesn't respond to that, but she does say, "Sergei, it is so good to see you."
"Likewise, ma'am. The madam will see you in the library."
"Excellent. I can't wait."
All right. You walk in into this foyer and it's, you know, it's got a fucking fountain and shit in it, you know, with marble statues and stuff. And he leads you to the left back into an alcove and there's a door. And as he's walking up to the door just opens on its own. Mm-hmm. And inside you see a rather nice library. It smells of freshly like oiled leather and things like that. Mm-hmm. And standing with her back to you, you see Madam Peabody, and she seems to be regarding some really old-looking book that's, you know, to the point where it's so old that as she's looking at it, you see her, like, wave her hand over it, and you see one of the pages, like, very gingerly move on its own, so she doesn't even touch it with her fingers.
So we're, like, past white glove territory then.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And so she, as she does that, and Sergei walks with you into the room, she just makes a motion with her hand, like a dismissing motion, and she says, "Thank you, Sergei." And he said, "Do you speak Russian?"
"Yeah."
She says in Russian, "Thank you, Sergei." And he says, "Yes, mother." But it's not like, you know, "You're my mom," but more of a, you know, like more of a...
like an honorific?
Honorific. And you see it, her back stiffens a little bit as if it annoyed her that he said that.
Okay.
And he backs out and the door closes and she looks up at you and she says, "You are stunning as ever."
"You know, Madam Peabody, so are you. You look fantastic."
"Well, thank you."
"Not a day older than when I last saw you."
"That kind of comes with the territory."
"Yes, I imagine so. It has been, gosh, what is it, 4 years?"
"Yes."
"And what a long and difficult 4 years it has been out of your presence."
She smiles and she says, "Platitudes have not always been your strongest suit, dear, but I appreciate the effort."
"You always said that effort is what matters."
"It is. It is. Unless you have no talent, then effort is all you have." "But we both know that you have more than that."
"Well, I have no talent at platitudes, so that is giving
it
what I've got."
"That is true. May I pour you a brandy?"
"You know, no, I don't think so. Thank you so much for the offer."
"Would you mind if I have one?"
"Absolutely not. You go ahead."
All right. She walks over to one of her decanters and pours herself a small brandy and turns and rests her hand next to the book. And she says, "What can I do for you, dear?"
"You know, it's odd. As far as I'm aware, you are the one who asked for me. So, I mean, I've been wanting to speak to you just... generally, as, you know, any student wants to see their old teacher. But, you know, just to catch up and stuff."
"I do have an offer for you, but as you say, it's more important to catch up." "So we can discuss business after."
"Okay, that sounds fantastic. So do you want to know what I've been up to?"
She pauses for a second as if she doesn't really, but then she says, "Of course."
"Well, see... I don't want to make you sit through everything twice, and it seems to me that you already kind of know what's been going on in my life."
All right, she smiles and she says, "I always take an active interest in all of my girls."
"That's exactly what I remember. Yeah, so I've been having so much fun up in St. Louis these past, gosh, is it 3-4 months now?"
Four, yes.
These last couple of days, as I'm sure you have heard, have been a little trying. I did get stabbed, so.
"Oh. Do you need medical attention?"
"No. I've been taken care of perfectly adequately, and so has the problem."
"Oh, good, good. And you've Got a new toy, I see.
Em?
Yes, dear. You've always had a soft spot for toys no one else wanted to play with.
I suppose you could call that my one single good quality.
No. You have many good qualities, dear. Mm. Many, many good qualities. That is one of your better qualities.
Ah, well, you flatter me. And flattery has always been your strong suit.
That it has.
Let's see. What else? I did hear the strangest news. I heard that things may not be as they seem with regards to, you know, my parents, my past, everything like that.
Yes.
So, I guess my question is...
Just say it, dear. We're all friends here.
I mean, there's a lot. Like, there is... And for the first time, her composure sort of breaks just very, very slightly. To anybody else, it would be imperceptible.
Yep. But... And all that her reaction is a slight raise of an eyebrow.
Ugh. God damn it. Like grandmother, like granddaughter. She says, yeah, so I heard that I was kidnapped, passed around like a bad penny, and then adopted. Which is, you know, as you can imagine, I'm having a little bit of trouble with that. And I wondered if you could weigh in on that.
All right, she looks at you, and she's looking, like, sincerely at you, and she says, my darling, you can say or ask anything you want. You don't have to do all of this build-up. We know each other better than that. Just ask what you need to ask. Quit being coy. That is not your strong suit.
So then I am Jenna Mayfair.
Yes. I mean... Names are really inconsequential. Was that your birth name? Yes. Hmm. But is that who you choose to be? It's up to you.
Right, right. Let's see. Am I 60 years old?
That's an excellent question. And I guess if you purely go by chronological age, then yes. Physiologically, it's more of a gray area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because you see... Aging in that regard is so beneath us.
I can't help but notice that you used us there. What do you mean by that?
We aren't beholden to the same rules that others are. You see, there's aspects of your life and your existence that have been kept from you, and that... Those who seek to repress that knowledge would be very keen to learn your true nature. And yes, I orchestrated quite a few things to ensure your safety and your well-being. Some of those actions could be seen as questionable.
Mm-hmm.
But in the greater scheme of it and the alternative, I pride myself in accepting the fact that that was the right decision. Since you're not working for your employer anymore,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps we could take things to a different level. Show a bit of trust both ways. All we can right. discuss this, and I have nothing to hide in regards to what has happened to you, so I am not out anything by telling you. If anything, it builds trust between us because now you will know the truth. But for me, you have always been a focal point in my life. For as long as you've been in my life. And I need to know that my trust in you is well-founded and that your loyalty can be unquestioned.
So what would you ask of me?
Well, the business part of our meeting, the reason I wanted to see you, I wanted to offer you a job and to compensate you for it. But now that we've established that maybe a deeper understanding would be in order, then perhaps money would be the smallest part of this.
Mm.
Your friend and my protege, Ms. LeBlanc, I'm going to send her on her final test, a task that is very important in unlocking her entire potential. This is one of those tasks that she could very likely complete this on her own without assistance. But there's a certain layer of this that ensures her success.
Okay.
And I know I'm being coy about it, and it's mostly just because I want to set the gravity of this. What I'm talking about is not an easy task. What I'm talking about is infiltrating the lair of a sleeping dragon and to eliminate it.
Killing a dragon.
And I know that you understand that is part of my nature and what I strive to do. I have never been one to side with the name givers.
Name givers?
It's an old name for dragons.
Oh.
And they fear me, but if they knew my plans here, they would stop at nothing to make sure that what I am attempting does not happen. Because the task that Ms. LeBlanc is going to do will upset the balance of the status quo and will strike at the heart of their power.
You know me, I love to upset the status quo. So ideologically, sure, absolutely. And I'm not opposed to killing a dragon. Sounds hard, but I'm assuming that this isn't something that's going to be done tomorrow. I'll have some time to prepare.
Of course.
I'm assuming. I do want to circle back, though. Your use of the word final was interesting. Do you mean the last thing that she needs to do to unlock her potential, or is there another reason why you use that word?
Are you asking if will she not survive the test? Not many tests are effective if you don't survive them. That would be considered failing a test.
Hmm.
Unless the test is to see if you're willing to sacrifice yourself. In this case, your concern isn't unfounded. And you see she's kind of staring off into space, as almost as if she's relishing talking about this. Like she's been wanting to talk about it, maybe to somebody, but she just hasn't had the opportunity to. Or, you know, it's just like she's finally putting it into words. So she's like, the death of Lotan will create a void. And in that void, something must step in to take its place. Otherwise, the door will open. He will step through. And everything we know and everything we cherish go away.
E, is this about that Usir stuff?
All right, she smiles and she says, yes, he has been called many things. Usir is one of them. As with a lot of lore, especially across civilizations and cultures, there are different names for the same thing. And Usir is one of his.
Right. So is there a reason why the dragon has to die and that we can't just leave it there?
Ah, I see. Of course. Lotan's time standing vigil at the gate, she has been corrupted by him. Just by the very presence of the gate leading to his city. And that corruption in minute amounts over the course of millennia has poisoned her mind, her essence, everything about her.
And then I'm assuming that she can't just be purified?
No, she cannot. Purification through flame.
Will Joe eventually be corrupted by this as well?
She smiles and she says, yes. And that is why I need you to go with her. For two reasons. I need you to be her protective knight, to stand vigil with her. And as a dutiful second, to kill her if she begins to turn.
And then after I do that, because I'm assuming that kind of thing is inevitable, right? After I do that, then it's going to be me standing in front of the door.
Yes.
And then when that happens and when I get corrupted, are you going to find some other bright-eyed youngsters to send along and kill me?
Yes. That is the tapestry in which we live. And it is not a joyful one. This duty falls to us, and unfortunately, that is part of the pact that was made from the beginning.
The pact?
Lotan and I made a pact that she would sit vigil and I would watch from the shadows and keep her children from exploiting and destroying the world that she loves.
No offense, but given what I understand your reputation to be with respect to dragons, why did she believe you? For that matter, why should I believe you?
I guess that is your burden. You don't have to believe me. And you don't have to do this. You could easily walk away and not have anything to do with this. You have been trained and guided all this time for this. But it is not your only choice. I am not saying you have no autonomy or no agency to make your own decision. I'm asking you to join this quest willingly. The alternative would be to utilize a different weapon. And frankly, that is the easier choice. But it is less reliable.
What other weapon?
She looks at you and she says, the child Mary.
That's the Ajita stuff, right?
Yes. The ancient prophecy. But it is unreliable. I have found that many prophecies of that nature are steeped in wishful thinking.
And there's so much space for misinterpretation.
Misinterpretation. And it is a lot to heap on the shoulders of a little girl.
Right.
Now, you and Joe are in your prime, and you are weapons honed and pointed in the right direction. If you chose to take the other path, then I would have to hone the girl to be the weapon. And she leans forward and she says, the honest answer to your question earlier is that very likely she would be the one I would send to kill you when you turned.
Whack. Well, and once again, Jet's composure breaks just a little bit. As someone who used to be a little girl with the world heaped on her shoulders, I have no choice but to do what I can to prevent that from happening to someone that, I'm going to be honest, I don't care that much about her. I've only barely met her, but people I care about her.
She holds out her hand. When she does so, you see like this illusionary topographical map of the city pop up. And then she kind of curls her fingers. And you've noticed many, many times she's always got like the most immaculate nails. She gets manicured every single day, you know, that kind of thing. But when she does this with this illusionary magic, the tips of her fingers and her nails turn black. And then they, as the illusion kind of morphs into the city and all that stuff, they go back to normal. And then you see the city itself, and then the buildings just kind of start to fade away. And then you can see like all of these different points of light, and the lights just like start to connect with lines of lights themselves. And as she does this, she says, this is the city as it used to be before it was built up and many of the areas. And she indicates one of the glowing lights. And she says, before the mounds were removed or destroyed, many still do exist, at least in essence. And then as she's doing this, she says, these ley lines, they are the key. And then she kind of indicates where the linked dots kind of go in this swirling pattern. And right in the center of it, she points and she says, it is there. You will find the opening. You will find the link to her. Joe must open the gate. And in doing so, she will awaken fully in her madness, and you must destroy her. And then she kind of blinks for a second, and you see her eyes turn to that old-ass book. And then she looks back at you, and she says, what do you know of the history of the city?
Well, I know that it used to be one of the biggest cities on the continent, back before the European settlers came through.
All right, she smiles. She says, yes, Cahokia, the Mississippians.
Mm-hmm. And they built mounds, most of which on this side of the river have been destroyed, but some still exist, especially on the east side. That's about it. History was not my strong suit.
Yeah, all right. And then she kind of turns her wrist, so like her palm is up, and now this swirling light show is, you know, like you're seeing this symbol, and she kind of makes it rotate, and she says, the city that you know of as St. Louis was once called the city of Cahokia. This was their land. But before that, it was known as something older. Cahokia was built atop it. And it is at the heart of that city where she sleeps. She sleeps in the black chamber of Zuxal.
So it's kind of like a Troy situation, layers and layers and layers.
Yes. Yes. She lies at the center of it. It is the gateway.
get it. It's like the gateway. It's, yeah.
This area has always been the gateway between the worlds. And then she smiles and she says, and not just between our world and his world, but many worlds. And then she just kind of like makes a dismissive gesture and the light show just kind of fizzles and fades. And she looks at you and she says, I know to you it has been a long time, but for me it has been so long. And now I am on the verge of completing everything I set out to do. And I am so thrilled that you are going to be part of this journey with me.
Well, then it's already decided. I would love to ally myself with you once more. Would you mind? That's a big old sandwich I'm going to have to devour later.
Of course.
Do you mind if I ask just a couple more questions about like my situation?
By all means.
Cool. So you were the one who paid my parents, or I guess the Burtons.
Yes.
And they received payment once, what? Once
you were returned to me.
Gotcha. Okay. So all of the stuff, the list that I found in Kobe's documents, everything that I've ever done up until, obviously, I was delivered, as you say. All of those memories, are they all fake then? My memories of my parents, you know, like me as a kid.
Kobe was very adept at making you see what he wanted you to see. So do I know if all of your memories are fabricated? I don't.
Well, I mean, if I was in a vat for the times where I would have been, you know, 2 years old or whatever, then logically.
Your brain was manipulated while you were in your stasis, yes, to believe things. Does that make them fake? The feelings are real.
Okay. So, obviously, the whole leg thing was going to have to happen somehow because, you know, they were designed for me.
Yes.
But somebody had to make that happen. Was that you or someone who worked for
you?
Did
I make the legs for you?
No. I mean, like, the whole thing where, you know, the accident and then the fallout and then the surgery and then...
What do you recall about your accident?
It was a pas de deux. So it was me and Alex, and I was supposed to throw her, do a jump, land, and then catch. And while I was in the air, I got dizzy, and suddenly I was on the ground, and I knew she was going to fall wrong. And I remember trying to catch her, and that's all I remember until I woke up.
Hmm. All right. So you're like standing. How far away are you from her?
Like 2 or 3 feet away.
All right. So she's listening to you talk about that and she's nodding. She says, I remember that day well. And then she reaches over and she closes the book.
Can I like peek at the book real quick?
Yeah.
Just to see what the fucking... what it says.
Well, first of all, you know, it's not like a regular book where it would have like a name on the spine. Go ahead and make your roll.
Okay. 4.
Okay. First of all, you know, the writing certainly was not Russian. It was something else that you've never really seen before. The pages themselves were very delicate, obviously, because the way she was doing it. And as she's closing it, you see not only is there writing, but there's appears to be some sort of like diagrams and things like that of something you don't know. Make a willpower roll.
Oh, Christ. Willpower. 3.
Oh, okay. So you see this, and as she's closing it, the writing and the symbols around the diagram, they almost like they seem to writhe for a minute, and you get this like wave, like you're about to puke. Then the book closes, mm-hmm. and then she raises her hand from it. And what the observation roll was is you saw that, you kind of went, ugh, like that. And then she closed it. As soon as she closed it, the nausea goes away. Mm-hmm. And then she raises her hand from it. And then as she's pulling her hand back, you get you know, like her perfectly manicured hand, the palm of her hand seems to be like sooty black, and then it just starts to fade back to her normal color.
That's wild.
She closes the book and she turns to you, and you know, you're looking a little green around the gills, but then you kind of snap out of it. And then she steps towards you and she holds out her hand as if she wants you to hold her hand. And she says, "Can I show you something?"
Okay.
And as soon as you touch her hand, you are instantly back in that moment of your accident.
Oh, that fucking sucks. Fuck.
Gross. You're there, but you're aware that this is the moment. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, it's not like you're just focusing on, you know, what's going on or how, you know, the next step. It's almost like you're, you know, so you can see yourself. It's like you're a video game and you're doing like a over the shoulder look of the, mm-hmm. of the,
like a third person.
Yeah. So you're not first person. It's, you know, third person. So
gotcha.
Anyway, so as you're doing this maneuver that only you can do, you're throwing Alex into the air and it's all happening in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And you look over. Away from what you're doing, and you can see Peabody in the audience watching. And you look back and you can see in your face the moment you started feeling off kilter or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then your vision snaps back to Peabody and you see both of her eyebrows go up as if she's surprised. And then she gets like a almost like a mad look on her face. And she turns and looks at someone and stares daggers at them.
Can I see who she's looking at?
All right. You look over and you see this regal looking elven woman.
Fuck!
And she's got like a smug look on her face. And you recognize the picture of Greenleaf.
That bitch.
Okay.
All right. And then when so then as you're starting to land, then, you know, and all the bad stuff happens, it fades. And now Peabody is really close to you. She's still holding your hand. She's really closed in on you.
So then Jet almost jumps, but then stops herself.
Right. And I don't know if you've ever, have you been this close? I mean, she's,
probably.
Has she ever hugged you?
God, no. The only time that she would have been that close would have been if she was like correcting posture or something right. like that. But that I wouldn't have been looking
right.
at her.
Right.
It would
okay.
be like behind my back.
All right. So she releases your hand and now you realize you're like, her arm is bent. So, I mean, you're within probably a foot from her as you come to out of this, as she's letting go of your hand. And she's looking like dead in your eyes. And as you're looking at her, you blink a couple of times because you swear her eyes are yellow. And then you blink, they're blue again. And she says, "Now you know."
Okay.
"I'm sorry that that happened to you."
"Me too."
"And I have done everything in my power to make her pay for what she had done." And then she nods at you and she says, "And I have to admit that I took advantage of the situation for my own end. And that it shames me to say it, but if I can put my trust and my faith in anyone, it's you, Jenna. You are the best."
"The best."
"The best."
"Thank you, madam."
"And now that our arrangement has been formalized, you have all of my resources at your disposal."
"Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?"
"My expectation for this mission, this task that I am setting Joe on and you, has been a long time in preparation. Nothing must stand in the way. Nothing. And nothing can deter Joe from her task, and you cannot allow her to be distracted from her task by any means necessary."
"Any means necessary. Okay."
All right. She smiles. She says, "You sure you don't want that brandy?"
"I'd take a shot."
All right. She like motions over and you see that at some point she had poured a second glass mm-hmm. and she motions towards it. And as you reach over and grab it, you hear the door open and Sergei walks in and she looks at him and then looks at you and she says, "We will speak again very soon."
"Yes, of course." And she takes a sip, appreciates the brandy. But then she locks eyes with Peabody, takes the rest of it like a shot, sets the cup down. She says, you know that I, more than anybody else, am willing to do what I need to do to get it done.
That's why you are the best.
And then she's going to go into like a proper dancer's curtsy.
She appreciates that. And she looks at Sergei, gives him a nod, and then he kind of motions like this way.
She nods at Peabody one last time, turns away, and starts walking very, very quickly out the door.
Okay. As you're walking out, Sergei is now escorting you to the front door. You just go with him?
She's leaving as quickly as possible.
Okay. So as you're headed to the front door, normally up until now, the doors have always opened on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're like you know, double timing it towards the mm-hmm. front door, it doesn't open until Sergei comes up behind you. And he doesn't like come up like skankily behind you. He just very methodically walks up. And then as he walks up, the door still doesn't open. And he holds up an ebony cred stick between his fingers. And he says, "You will find whatever you need is taken care of."
She takes it and puts it in her pocket.
It has the access information to the account. And it also has my personal number should you need me.
Thank you, Sergei.
You're welcome. And then he looks at you and he says, "And from this moment, she is no longer madam. She is mother." And then the door opens.
Yeah, Jet fucking triple times it this time out to dog leash.
Yep, he's like stubbing out a joint. Where the gas tank normally would be.
Right.
He's just like stubbing it out. It kind of crumbles the roach in his hand as you come walking up. See him smelling it, and he's like, "Sorry."
And she says, "We're leaving."
He kind of looks past you, and he says, "I got this thing rigged with frag grenades. You want me to fire a couple into the front door?"
No.
All right, and then he sees you, and he he's just fucking around, and then he looks at you, and he goes, "Oh," and he kind of gets off the bike and he like puts his arm on your shoulder and he's like, "Come on, let's get out of here." And he like picks you up and puts you on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's riding the bike and he like takes his hand and he like puts it on your thigh, kind of like, you know, steadying you. Mm-hmm. And he says to you, "Let's go get those donuts, okay?"
Yeah. And then we're just going somewhere, anywhere. I don't care as long as it's not here.
All right. He's driving. And then the very last thing is, you know, you get past the gate and you're driving down the little wooded road. And then he starts to make the turn. And you just see him just very slightly turn his head towards the house as if he's just kind of like sizing it up. And then you start driving.
And all he can hear as he's driving off is just the beginning of some sniffs. And then eventually it turns into full-on sobs.
Okay.
She's just holding onto him for dear life, sobbing on the back of this motorcycle.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Resting Glitch Face. Theme music by Synthesk. Background music by Machinima Sound. Outro music by Austin Miller. Edited and produced by Sid. Continuity consulting by Dot. Shadowrun is property of Catalyst Game Labs. Resting Glitch Face is a production of Openly Gamer Theater and property of Side Tangent Productions.